brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. War is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Morning, good morning. You're listening to Recovery Radio this beautiful morning down in Bolivar, West Virginia, on Enlightened Radio down at the caboose, the red caboose. Yeah, we're getting it all together down here. Marvin Gaye says, what's going on? And I want to know, what is going on? So much is happening in the world. And part of the lyrics that I really like in that theme song, What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, is that mother, mother, and father, father, there's too many of us dying. And he says that love will conquer hate. I think that our president has shown some love, but that's another subject. The topic this morning is suicide awareness. I don't want to begin off too solemn, but we're going to explore this topic. And I have a very special guest coming on this morning, Chef David Props, who was my instructor when I went to culinary school over at James Rumsey Technical Institute. And he'll be joining us this morning to talk about his experiences and who he is. And he was a friend of Anthony Bourdain. He met him while he was in culinary, and so he's going to open that up. But at first, I want to share something. You know, Anthony Bourdain, who committed suicide on June the 8th in Strasbourg, France, he hung himself, and there was no indications of sadness and depression and all the things that you would think would be on someone's face or their countenance when they're getting ready to commit suicide. But I want to share a letter that he wrote, or a piece that he wrote when he came to West Virginia. And it says, Anthony Bourdain notes from West Virginia. It says, last fall, after stumbling off a plane in Los Angeles and being confronted by a cameraman from TMZ, I made a very ill-considered, off-the-cuff joke about what I might feed President Donald Trump, and the knives were out. The alt-right trolls online were calling for my head. The conservative talking heads were equating me with Lee Harvey Oswald, and the Secret Service was waiting to interview me in New York. But I was far away from New York, in the cold country of McDowell County, West Virginia. The heart, presumably, of God, guns, and Trump's America. Any concerns about how I might be welcomed there, however, quickly disappeared. The hills of West Virginia are breathtakingly beautiful. I concur. The people I met there were unfailingly kind and forgiving of my liberal tendencies. Though the culture, landscape, attitudes, voting tendencies, and religious beliefs were about as far from my own as they are from Saudi Arabia's, I felt at home. And when he was down here in West Virginia, he made some really stunning comments that really lift my heart up. And I used to watch his show some of the time, but every time I watched it, I came away feeling rejuvenated and restored. I felt like I was right there with him. He was a great storyteller. And so he goes on to say that, like any other episode of Parts Unknown, whether in Vietnam or Nigeria or any city in the United States, this West Virginia episode is a plea for understanding of the peoples whose personal histories, sense of pride, independence, and daunting challenges deserve respect. It's a walk in somebody else's shoes. The stereotypes about West Virginia, it turns out, are just as cruel, ignorant, misguided, patronizing, and evil as any other. Every meal might have begun with saying grace, but there was nothing hypocritical about it. People do care about each other. I concur. Friends, family, and the community are held close. The men and women who come from families of our five generations of coal mining are not naive about the promises of cynical politicians or the inevitable future of fossil fuel. Their identities, their aspirations, and their situation are far more complex than one can imagine, and their needs are more immediate. There's a reason why so many West Virginians love their birthplace so fiercely and have fought so long and so hard to preserve it. I hope this show gives you all a glimpse. I am intensely grateful for the kindness, hospitality, and patience the people of West Virginia showed to this ignorant rube from New York City who arrived with so many of the usual preconceptions only to have them turned on their head. Everybody in our crew felt the same way. So Anthony Bourdain did a really, really good segment here in West Virginia. And he had some really positive things to say. And people are misguided. So that is one of the reasons that I liked his show, because he was all inclusive. He didn't just go to the fine five-star restaurants when he went to a place, a new city, or even a new part of the world. He went to where the people who the mom and pop stores, he dined with the president, but they didn't go to a five-star restaurant when they dined. They were on the side of the street in one of the little cafes in Vietnam. And so I think that this man had really an impact. A lot of places before he passed away, before he took his own life, should I say, wherever I would go, there was always some conversation between the time I arrived and the time I left that included Anthony Bourdain. You know, someone would remember something he said and then they would add it to their repertoire of conversation that was to be had in the local restaurants here. And so my guest that is coming on is Chef David Props, and so he should be calling us very shortly to give us, because after Mr. Bourdain took his own life, I received on my news feed a picture of Chef Props and Anthony Bourdain. And Chef looked to be maybe 10 or 15 younger, 15 years younger than he is right now. But he looked very happy, and so did Chef Tony, as some would call him, where I read the people that he hobnobbed with. And so Chef Props was one of the people in my life that, he just added some flavor, some flair to studying culinary in school. And so, I mean, I just take my hat off to Chef Props and all that he taught me as a young man. Well, he was younger, much younger than I was. And I think I was the oldest person in the class. But it was such a joy to be under his leadership at James Rumsey Technical Institute. And some of the things that we did while we were in school really stuck with me. He gave me a word, a French word. It's called mise en place. I think that might be Chef Props calling us now. He's always on time, I can tell you that. And when we were in school, he was a stickler for that. Good morning. How are you? You're welcome to Recovery Radio. All right, this is Chef Props. Is that
yes,
you?
Yes, it is. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing just fine, Chef. I'm so delighted that you decided to take the time out this morning to speak with us. You know, I was
sure,
looking
no
at
problem.
Your...
My pleasure for being with you.
Yeah, I was looking at your profile here on your Facebook page, and the first person I see when I hit the button that says about is Jamal. He called himself Debo now. You remember Brother Jamal? He has a lot of muscles.
Oh, yes,
and things,
of course.
Yeah. and then I see Erica down here. No, I see Elizabeth as well, the old crew. So welcome, Chef Props. Let me introduce you. Chef Props studied culinary arts at the Culinary Institute of America. He lives in Martinsburg, West Virginia. And it goes on and on and on, just to give all the layout of all the things that you've done. So I want to start the segment off because the topic this morning, Chef Props, is suicide awareness. First of all, tell us a little bit about what you're doing now.
As of the last 7 weeks, I've accepted a new position. My wife and I currently reside in Loudoun County, Virginia, and I drive down here to Washington, D.C. every morning. I'm the new executive chef here at the City Club of Washington, D.C. We are a private, member-only social club, and we have approximately 875 members, but we're right, you know, about two blocks away from the White House. We're right off at 13th Street, and it's a beautiful little club. We are unfortunately in the basement of a building, but I have one formal dining room, and then we have a lounge where the majority of our members, congregate throughout the course of the day. And we're also a pretty heavy banquet house too. So we do a lot of business with the community here in D.C.
Oh, that is wonderful! I had no idea you had moved. I thought you were right here with me today in West Virginia. But I've been keeping up with you.
Yeah. Someday I will get back to West Virginia. That's for sure.
Yeah, because I mean, cooking, Chef Props. I won't spend too much time about what you added to my life when I was under your leadership at James Rumsey, but I'm going to save that for the end of the show. Talk to us a little bit about Chef Bourdain, and take us through that and what it means to you and how it impacted you.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, Mr. Boyd, my heart stopped. There's really no other way to put it. I literally had, I was getting ready for work. This all occurred on Friday morning. I was getting ready for work, and my daughter was running around, and I was trying to get her situated to take her to daycare. And I went to go put my phone away, but I happened to check at it, and I had received a text from my father and one of my close friends who now resides in upstate New York, and they both had mentioned that Tony had passed away. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I don't feel that, I was a close friend by any stretch, but, I think when you enter any sort of profession, you find someone who you sort of look up to. And I know there's a lot of chefs out there that probably did look up to him, but I also feel like there's probably quite a few that looked at him differently, because he did, for the first 40 years of his life he cooked in the kitchen, but he kind of fell into the luxury of traveling the world, and even he himself said that he was very fortunate to do what he did every day. So again, I believe that's why this kind of hit me so hard, because it, you know, when I was growing up, you know, I was raised in a very strict religious household. You know, I don't recall us ever missing a Sunday church. You know, I was also bullied when I was a kid, and I struggled with suicide too. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I contemplated it many a times, but I think it's easier to think about it than to actually go through with it. And especially now, since I'm married now, I have a kid, I've got another one on the way. It changes your life and you look at things quite differently. And I know that it changed, you know, having a child changed Anthony's life too. I think it's going to take time to learn what really was going on in his life that the public didn't know about. I think that's going to be the big struggle. You know, maybe he said something, maybe he didn't. I think it's very unfortunate that Chef Repair, Eric Repair from La Bernadette, who is a close friend of his, found him. You know, because that's something that he's going to have to live with for the rest of his life. So I feel very sorry for him. But it was very tragic.
Yeah, you know, that's a question for you, and I'm going to have I got a few questions I want to ask you about the suicide piece. But you know, that how would you say that people are responding to what he did? I read a comment on one of the posts, and it called him a coward and a junkie. And how would you respond to that if someone said that?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I read so much every day. Of course, I will admit I really, really try hard to stay off of social media. I only have a Facebook account. I don't even have an Instagram, a Snapchat, or any of this other stuff that they have available out there. So to even just check Facebook, you know, once or twice, maybe three times a day is kind of crazy for me, just because I really don't have time for it. But to answer your question, I read something actually last night that Bill Murray made a comment about. I can't remember the exact quote, but for people to make these assumptions that he was a coward, you can't make these assumptions. People base too much today, in today's society, they base too much off of social media. And, I'm not even 35 yet, but I can tell you that there is such a significant change in the way that we view things today because of social media. You know, I feel like there's a positive side to it, but there's also a huge negative to social media, and this is one of them, because people just, they start things that they have no idea about. The drugs, the addiction in the kitchen, were bad when I got into the industry, but they're still bad. You know, there's a lot of people that have to, you know, I won't say shoot up, but they have to use in order to get through service, to get through the day. And it's a real shame, you know. I'm kind of appalled by the way people kind of perceive who he was on the negative side. Of course, I don't want to hear any negative about him. I don't think too many people do, but he wasn't perfect. I mean, let's face it.
Neither is any of us. Correct. Yeah. So I honestly feel the same as you, because if it doesn't serve any good purpose, then it shouldn't be served at all. You know, that's one of the things that you taught me when I was at James Rumsey with you, is just integrity. I mean, that just stuck with me, and that was how you ran your classroom, and that was how you presented yourself walking the hallways of that school. And you know, I was just proud to be a part of that group, Chef. So, you know, I really want to thank you for
that.
Thank you. So, stigma. So that's one of the things that people stigmatize. And I heard you mention something about the drugs in the industry. Give me your thoughts about, paint us a picture of what it looks like in your particular restaurant where you are right now. I don't know how much you can say or how much you're willing to say, but talk to us a little bit about that. Drugs and suicide.
Just the drug aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I mean, I can't really go into a whole lot of detail in regards to my current place of employment, but what I can tell you is that, like I said, you know, getting into this industry, I'll give you an example. When I was still in culinary school, I was coming home pretty late. I can't remember if I was out partying or if I was actually working at that time, but I remember coming in quite late. It was probably 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I was still living in the dormitories at the Culinary Institute, and one of the guys who lived down the hall from me, he was, you know, I was a couple years out of high school when I finally went to college, but he was probably second career, had to have been. He was in his early 40s,
mm-hmm.
and he yelled down the hall to me. He's like, "Hey, can you come down here and help me with something?" And I said, "Sure." So I ran down the hall just to see what he needed. And the long story short is he wanted me to help him shoot up. So, I mean, it just kind of, you know, it kind of hit me, like, what am I getting into? Mm-hmm. Like, why is this such a thing in this industry?
Mm-hmm.
And I had put in a couple years of experience prior to going to culinary school, just so I could, you know, have a better grasp when I got to school. So I saw a lot of the use and the abuse that was going on prior. But to actually do it, I mean, I won't go into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really steered away from it as much as I possibly could, but I never saw anything spectacular, or you know, I never saw that a need to do it to get through the day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I personally always felt that, you know, working a 16-hour day was just part of the gig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you chose to. You know, work this craft. You got to put in the hours. I mean, people expect you to be there.
Right.
And I mean, ultimately, that's, I think, the reason why, you know, people such as Chef Bourdain and others get addicted to drugs is because of the amount of hours that they spend. You know, we're you know, we're so far away from family and friends for such a long period of time of our life. You know, it's work,
yeah.
work.
Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of us don't appreciate good food. Well, what goes into good food? We appreciate the good food. But you taught me that it's a lot of work and a lot goes into it. But the end result is just amazing. You know, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around sous vide. The sous vide technique. So you remember that, right? Hey, Chef,
absolutely.
I got to tell you, they're still talking. Dr. Ed Grove and some others are still talking about that particular day. And you know, and I just want to thank you for how well organized it was and how well it went off. And so all the
I appreciate that.
The folks in the class that day, I mean, we, we're still talking about it. So, you know, hats off.
I miss teaching.
To you.
Yeah, I certainly miss teaching. It was that was a great job. It really was. You know, was, people ask me about that part of my career, and it was very gratifying to, you know, see where people were at the beginning of the year, mm-hmm. and then to see them where they were when the 11 months were over. You know, and how much I felt that they walked away with.
Yeah.
It was super gratifying.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, more towards the end of my career, mm-hmm. I'll go back into teaching. I felt that, I sort of got good at it.
Yeah.
You know,
I'd say
it was definitely tough at first, mm-hmm. but, it became fun. It was actually a very fun job to have, and I enjoyed it thoroughly.
And you took us from not being accredited to being accredited, right? How did that make you feel?
Yeah, I did. Within the first year that I was hired, mm-hmm. I was given 1 year, and I completed the accreditation in 1 year. So that program, as far as I know, still today, it's accredited by the American Culinary Federation, out of St. Augustine, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, anybody that knows the ACF, it's the largest American culinary federation in the country. So,
yeah. So Martinsburg, West Virginia, Jefferson, or Berkeley County can look forward to Chef Props establishment one day, huh? Maybe. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I'd love to. We'll see. My wife, of course, is from the Martinsburg area.
Uh-huh.
She grew up and went to school there in Berkeley County. So, you know, there's a very good chance that we'll move back someday. but as of right now, I'm enjoying my time here in D.C. and working hard. You know, James, again, I appreciate you asking me to interview with you today. It's definitely a tough subject to talk about.
Yeah.
It's not, it's not an easy one by any stretch.
Yeah.
Because, again, let's talk about Food Network for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been watching a lot of videos every night since Friday. About, you know, Anthony, and I've come across quite a few where he was giving a lot of the people on Food Network a hard time, such as Rachel Ray and mm-hmm. Mara Batali, and I'm not really sure some of the others, but, you know, he was giving them such a hard time because of how fake he thought they were, and I would have to agree with him. I mean, you know, they're on TV with a beautiful face, and they're getting paid top dollar to do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's a bad way of looking at it, especially if you're young. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of part of that era,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, when I was, I'd say approximately 14, you know, Food Network was really just starting to get big, and Emeril, if everybody remembers,
mm-hmm.
you know, Emeril and Bam, you know, that was huge,
mm-hmm.
and that really took off, right, like I said, right as I kind of got into the industry. You know, I started at the very bottom washing dishes, you know, for 3 seasons at a local country club, and then finally got my feet into a kitchen prepping mm-hmm. food, and finally working the hotline and the pantry, and it's not easy. It's a very, very difficult job to take on. It's very stressful, but I enjoy it every day. I go home completely satisfied.
I
think the hardest part about my job is not taking things so personally once I hit my front door. I try to drop everything that I've been thinking about on the way home at the front door. So when I walk in my house, I really steer away from even talking to my wife about it. She'll simply ask me if I've had a good day, and I'll tell her yes or no. And even if I say no, I really don't talk about it, occasionally, but I typically say, yes, I had a good day, and that's that. I just leave it there because I don't want to dwell on it. It's not something that, you know, we're given one life, and we have to make the best of it. And I think that I think that's the toughest part of our industry, is just bringing home all that stress every day.
Mm-hmm. So how do you let it go? You have a technique that you use. I know you're very technical when it comes to culinary food and stuff. How do you just let the work go once you get home?
That's a really good question, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people work out. I, believe it or not, and this is crazy, because even when I was teaching, you know, I was single the majority of my career when I was teaching, and I never cooked for myself. I ate out all the time, which was good, because I didn't eat fast food. I typically would go to a nice restaurant and buy, you know, depending on how much money I'd saved up, maybe I'd buy myself a nice meal, but I usually would get the cheapest thing on the menu. But I ate out all the time, or I ate out with friends and went to, you know, barbecues and this and that. But nowadays, to answer your question, I cook for my family. That's kind of my way of escaping. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy, you know, barbecuing. Mm-hmm. I've got a big green egg, and as long as the weather's good, I try to get out there on the patio and barbecue for my family. And I've got a smoker, and I try to smoke some things every once in a while. And and even if I can't get outside, I like to cook. Believe it or not, I really discarded cooking when I was living on my own. I didn't like to do it. I think a lot of it was probably the cleaning up part, but I even do that too. You know, doing the dishes actually kind of eases my mind of a lot of things.
Okay. Well, you know, and one of the things that this is what you did for me. And you know, you remember, I'm just going to remind you, you know, I really couldn't cook when I came to your class. I had no idea, never even operated in the kitchen, even with my mom. But there was a station in there for me, and it was the pots and pans and the cleaning up. And I remember everybody used to want to pitch in, and I would say, no, let me do the dishes, because this is what I'm good at. And so, you know, you taught me how to be to help in the kitchen. There's a culinary name for what I do. You taught us all those names, but
sure,
yeah. The people, when someone put a dirty knife down, when they turned back to get it, it was clean. And so I did that. And also, I learned how to do front of the house, that I really enjoyed. And so the cooking part, and so the team realized, and I think you ushered them in a way that they wouldn't criticize me or get annoyed with me because I couldn't flip the egg over. You were teaching us one morning how to throw it in the air, but the team, the class, my classmates, because of your leadership, they embraced me. And so I was and right now today at home, because my wife loves to cook, but she is a mess in the kitchen. So I was able to take that with me, and I do it to this day. She cooks, and I clean up the kitchen. I mean, and I'm really, really good at it, you know, getting all the little spots out of the pot in the corner, you know. And so you taught me all of that, and so I really appreciate it. I'm looking at your Facebook page here, and I notice... And you said, I finally figured out what the air compressor was good for. And you're cleaning. Oh. I think you might be cleaning something here. What is that you're cleaning?
Those are morel mushrooms.
Morel mushrooms.
Yeah, so that was actually a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. I believe I remember that post. Like I said, I don't spend much time on there, but... Uh-huh. I was working at another golf club, and this was in the spring, because those are morel mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And being that it was a golf club, they had this air compressor outside of the cart barn. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 100% sure what they use the air compressor for, other than to just, you know, blow sand off of your shoes or whatever. But it just, it was there. And my boss kind of showed me that it was there. I never really noticed it. And we were contemplating, you know, what's the best way to clean morels, because, you know, mushrooms in general are just, they're fungus. They're dirty. They come from the floor of the forest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really the last thing you want to do is soak your mushrooms. Mm-hmm. Because they're, you know, they're sponges. So we were using the air compressor to clean the inside and the outside of the morels.
Right.
And, like I said, if I remember correctly, those mushrooms were, those morels were huge. Mm-hmm. They were beautiful that year.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was thinking, Chef, I work a lot in the substance abuse field now, you know, and that's what the name Recovery Radio. So we talk about recovery and how to get people to not only stop using drugs, but to stay stopped. And so I think that your approach to cooking and life and everything in general is probably one of the better ways that we can introduce to folk to get them, you know, get their mind going in some other direction with food and conversation and education about food, and to be able to start these conversations about suicide and suicide prevention and suicide awareness and how it connects to drug abuse and child abuse and spousal abuse. And so I think that, you know, cooking, when I would watch Chef Bourdain's show, I would always come away enlightened by something that he said. And I kind of use some of his words and yours as well. I use mise en place a lot, Chef. You remember that word?
It's a great word.
It is. And so whenever I say it, you know, people say, well, what does that mean? And I get a chance to explain it to them because, you know, my grandson, he gets ready to do something and he has to go back and forth picking up tools from here. And I said, why don't you, let's look at mise en place. And I pull out my little book that we got in class and we look it up. And you get everything ready before you start. And so that was a good lesson, something simple to a lot of people. But, Chef, a lot of folk that are dealing with substance abuse have lost the ability to make sound decisions that are constructive and not destructive. So I really appreciate it. And so this whole idea of Chef Bourdain committing suicide, being knowing you and then seeing that picture, that kind of sent me over the edge as well, because it gets personal. When you see a good friend next to somebody that you don't know, it makes them your good friend, you know, because one thing I know about you, Chef, is you're a straight shooter. And if that guy, if that guy wasn't on the up and up, you wouldn't be embracing him and hitting us with that big golden smile of yours. I see you got your little,
like I said, it really did hit me hard. And I was very fortunate when I was in school that, I had the chance and really the opportunity to not only meet him, but I got to listen to him. He spoke, and it was kind of funny. I was telling one of my employees just the other day that I almost forgot about it, but I almost slept in that day that he came to campus. I had gone to class that morning, and when I got done, I had worked all weekend, and I believe that was like on a Monday, and I was exhausted. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to lay down and take a nap before I go listen to the speech. And I almost overslept. but I was able to catch the end of the book signing, mm-hmm. And I got to talk with him a little bit, and then I got to listen to him. I think he spoke for like over an hour and a half, and then there were a group of 10 of us that, again, I was so fortunate. I got to have dinner with him, and it was just unbelievable. I don't think I asked one question at dinner. I just listened because he really was very unique. I mean, everything that we read about, he was incredibly intelligent. And I mean, that was very obvious from his books. Mm-hmm. You know, most of us that are in the industry, we've all read his books. Mm-hmm. And I really was not a huge reader before I went to culinary school. But at this point in my career, I've probably established over 350 cookbooks,
wow.
Which include a majority of his. And his Kitchen Confidential, I read that on the train during Thanksgiving from New York to D.C. Mm-hmm. in one shot. It was just, wow. I think it's probably the fastest I've ever read a book in my life. And it was really hard to put it down, mm-hmm. because he literally was, you know, he just captivated you. He was talking directly to you in that book, and I understood everything. So
man, that's amazing.
Yeah, it just, you know, it mm-hmm. it's still very mind-boggling to think about that he's unfortunately no longer with us.
Yeah, yeah, that is kind of mind-boggling. You know, and how he the conversation, whatever, grief, happiness, joy, solitude, everything. He could introduce a conversation that has food involved in it, and how, you know, how important it is for us to, you know, do food, cook food with love and respect and, you know, and the cultures. I mean, I saw him eat some stuff. Wow.
I really will have to say that I think one of the biggest things that we all need to take away from this is, one, like you said, I think we need to talk more about suicide. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be a much more open conversation. But then, you know, bringing, you know, food, talking about food, mm-hmm. You know, again, we're in a society today where very few families sit down at a kitchen table and at the same time and have a meal together. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he kind of was trying, you know, he was trying really hard to bring that back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's really any establishment where you go in, you look up and you see someone on their cell phone or, you know, mm-hmm. So my wife and I, she makes me, well, it's kind of on automatic now because I have to leave the phone in the car. If we go out to a restaurant, no telephone and none of that. So we, you know, and sometimes we talk, sometimes we just listen. And a lot of times we get to talk to other people. But I agree with you how, you know. So if you could institute one out of 10 things for us to do today to kind of break that cycle of not communicating, what would you have us do around food? Pair us up.
I think I understand your question. Are you kind of talking about what we can do differently to?
Yes.
Okay. And again, you're looking for approximately 10 things.
Well, no, you can just give me one.
Oh, okay.
One.
Well, you know, I'm a big, I'm really big on what you just mentioned about the cell phone. Mm-hmm. You know, when my wife and I and our child sit down for dinner, when I'm home, you know, I don't play on my phone. I set all work and friends aside for that short period of time that we're sitting at the dinner table. I think it's imperative, actually, because, you know, it just, again, we're in such a busy society today that we're just not making time for our family. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely important. Mm-hmm. Life is too short to go through I almost feel like I'm ignoring people when I answer my phone, mm-hmm. you know, and I know some people don't feel the same way when they answer theirs, but that's really how I feel, and I don't like that feeling. Maybe that's my conscience talking to me, but.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm looking here at Paul Bocuse. Talk to us a couple of minutes about your relationship with him and who he is.
Well, again, if anybody's been watching, you know, these YouTube videos or clips online about Anthony Bourdain, they're probably coming across one of his most, you know, popular and probably his personal favorite trip that he made to Lyon, France, mm-hmm. and I was very fortunate to go to Lyon in 2013, and my wife and I ate at Restaurant Paul Bocuse. It's actually where I proposed to her,
All right.
You know, he was hands down one of the most influential chefs of our time. You know, Nouvelle Cuisine. Mm-hmm. You know, which essentially means, you know, lighter sauces, a little healthier cooking. It really kind of sums that up. But Anthony would tell you today that we all looked up to him, and what he meant to us was that, you know, he was one of the first chefs that ever stepped foot really into the dining room. Back in the late 60s, early 70s, mm-hmm. And he kind of pioneered the chef status today. He was probably one of the wealthiest, of his time, but that's because he started this empire. He held 3 Michelin stars since 1974, I believe. Mm-hmm. It might have even been earlier than that, which is incredibly hard to do because you have the ones who rate that come into your restaurant mm-hmm. every year. And if they find something that flaws you, they can knock you off a star. But he maintained 3 stars. Again, I believe it's been since 1974. And wow. Now that he has passed, and he, you know, unfortunately, we just lost him a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. His people, his family, they're still running the restaurant and maintaining that status. Mm-hmm.
So where might we, because, you know, I did in school, in your class, that was, we had to pick a chef, a celebrity chef, and I did Paul Bocuse, and I still have my paper that you graded me on.
I remember.
Gave me an A, yes. Yes, and so it came as a now I'm not going to say a welcoming, but you know, I felt validated when I saw where you posted something, posted a picture about Paul Bocuse, and I said, thank you, Chef Props, for introducing me to the world of Chef Paul, because I'd done that paper.
Yeah.
And I saw that picture. So that was kind of moving for me. And for us to be coming to this moment about Chef Bourdain, you know, and I don't really believe in happenstance. So, you know, we just have to wait and see. So where might some of us, I already know, but you can tell us, where might we find a glimpse into the legacy of Paul Bocuse? I won't make you guess. I'm going to say Ratatouille. Is that correct?
When Ratatouille was written, of course, Ratatouille was a lot of people who've seen the behind the scenes of Ratatouille know this, but probably one of the most famous American chefs, Thomas Keller, he kind of helped, you know, produce that movie. But it was sort of a take on Paul Bocuse and his restaurant in Lyon. Very so it's that I totally forgot about that, but very unique.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just been a really delightful experience. I'm sorry that we would even be talking under these circumstances, but I'm happy that we are talking. I want to ask you, Chef, if I get the opportunity, because I do a lot of fundraising, I'd like to put together something, maybe an alumni or reunion or something for some of the students who are still around in the Martinsburg area, and see if you would come out and help us prepare some food at some point. You know, might be next spring. I think I will try, because spring seems to be one of the best times of the year for you. Is that correct? And why so?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're actually getting, you know, this is D.C., so we're actually getting ready to slow down the months of July and August. But, you just let me know, and I'll do my best to be there.
Yeah. And I know Erica and Jamal and I know Elizabeth. And as a matter of fact, I saw Marissa on television yesterday. Apparently, her car had went underwater at one of these events.
My.
There was an event somewhere. I think they were looking at some kind of live concert, and when they came out, everybody's car was underwater. And Marissa was one of the people that they interviewed because her car was underwater. So maybe I'll get to reach out to her sometime later today. But this has really been a joy, Chef Props. Any parting words for us?
No, I mean, like I said, James, I think it's I think it's imperative that suicide is not something that should be ashamed to talk about. Mm-hmm. I think. Believe it or not, I think it runs through a lot more people's minds than the general public knows about. Mm-hmm. I kind of hate to hear people say that, you know, someone such as Anthony was battling demons. I'm not sure exactly what that means, mm-hmm. but and I mean, who knows? Maybe I'm wrong, but. I just think that, what we have going on in our minds is very, it's not really understood very well sometimes. So, but again, it's something that most certainly needs to be talked about. And I think that if anybody out there who may be listening is contemplating this, I think it's something that you need to reach out and talk to someone about.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to give out a number where if someone is struggling with harming themselves or just contemplating, you need somebody to talk to, you can call 1-800-273-8255. That's a suicide hotline. And get some conversation going on, the people around you or even total strangers that you feel comfortable talking to, actually, and call and reach out to somebody. And so I really appreciate it. I think this conversation needs to happen more readily and more often, Chef Props. And like you said, people need to reach out and stop the stigma, driving people underground and the shaming and, so I really appreciate you, Chef Props, and don't be a stranger and take care of that beautiful family of yours and cook some good food, okay?
Thank you. Thank you, James. Yeah. Let's grab coffee sometime.
Yes, sir. We'll do that real soon. Okay, Chef. And God bless you. You want to close out with Marvin Gaye.
Oh, Marvin Gaye.
Gay. Yes, sir. I love that. That was a great interview. Chef Props is a great guy. Yeah, man. There's a lot of information that we can use, and I really appreciate his honesty and he was definitely the better teacher.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
We'll see you all next week.
Great show.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love in here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality.
Sister,
talk to me,
sister,
so you can see.
Sister,
oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Right now. Judge us simply 'cause our hair is long. Oh, you know that we've got to find a way. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me.